Are we live? Man, you already know what it is, man. It's your boy, Mr. Williams. I Talk Gray, and I'm here today with a heavy hitter. I have to do this right. I am here with a psychiatrist, a mother, scientist, American soldier, mental health advocate, talk show, television, news, and radio expert, author, and so much more, Dr. Delvina Thomas. How you doing today?
Hey, I'm well. I'm peachy.
Okay, I like that.
And you got it all. You were spot on. That was good.
Really? That was good? You like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because oftentimes half the people will say psychologist. Oh, I'm sorry. What is it? Yeah. So you got the psychiatrist.
Okay. What's the difference between them two, though?
Yeah. So commonly misunderstood, a psychiatrist is a medical doctor. A psychiatrist is a physician. So the similarities are that medical doctors, psychiatrists, and psychologists attend college. They both get a bachelor's degree. And then folks who become psychiatrists go to medical school. Mm-hmm. So you apply to med school. You take the MCAT to get in. Medical school is 4 years, whereas psychologists will apply to graduate school to get into a PhD program. Mm-hmm. Sometimes folks will apply to get into a master's program first and then go back and do a PhD or a PsyD. So they go to graduate school. And then once both specialists graduate, the psychiatrist has to do a residency. So for physicians, medical doctors to become a specialist, you have to work almost for like minimum wage or less. Based on the amount of hours that you are working as a resident, you go work for a hospital or a training program in your specialty.
Okay.
So for psychiatry, we train in psychiatry and neurology. So we have a 4-year residency. So it's a total of 12 years of learning and schooling. Psychologists, they finish.
Years.
Yeah. Psychologists graduate from their PhD program, and some of them will do a year of a clinical internship or something.
Okay.
But they don't do that 4 years. So the biggest difference is that psychiatrists are physicians. We're medical doctors. We can treat anything. We can prescribe medications. I don't list that anymore as the biggest difference because now, because we're so short psychiatrists, some states allow psychologists to take a program. I want to say it's like a 1-year program, actually probably less, to become a prescribing psychologist.
Okay.
But the only thing they can prescribe are psychiatric medications, whereas a psychiatrist can prescribe anything.
So are you able to tell, like, who actually needs to be prescribed something versus the people that are just trying to get a check?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that's a really good question because some folks, it's like any other specialty or any other job where some people are really good at it and some people suck at it. And so some psychiatrists are not intuitive. Some people go into a certain career for the wrong reasons. I believe that God gave me a gift, and that's what makes me a damn good psychiatrist, a damn good person, you know, someone who's intuitive. I read people very well. I think that's one of my strengths. And I apply that to my practice. Some people go and they become, you know, a psychiatrist or something like that to learn how to be a person. That's going to sound crazy, but
yeah,
it's the truth. Some people are socially inept. They're socially awkward. And
okay.
So they will become a mental health specialist or professional to deal with their own stuff. But for me, it was the opposite. I recognized that I had certain attributes that were God-given, and I decided to apply that in this field.
Okay. So does the doctor ever need a doctor?
I have a cohort of just spectacular friends, men and women. And so, you know, we're there for one another. I have not needed to be in psychotherapy. I don't need to see a psychiatrist. I don't take meds. I've never taken meds.
Okay.
I'm laughing just because I've never answered that question during an interview.
Okay.
So I have spectacular friends, man. I have a phenomenal village. And so I believe in being proactive versus reactive. Oftentimes we are so reactive. We wait for things to happen or we wait for the stuff to hit the fan and then we're trying to come up with a plan. I'm all about being preemptive, making a plan ahead of time. So that's why I have such great friends. I understand the importance of creating a bomb ass circle and ensuring that circle is not a handicap for you and it doesn't compromise anything that you're trying to do. And it has to be a well-balanced circle, right? Because if you're trying to become a multimillionaire, who's the best person to hang around to become a multimillionaire?
Exactly. Facts.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, but how do you manage your peace since you pour into everybody else?
Ooh, you would ask that question. My gosh. You know, I do so many things. The first thing that comes to mind for me now, for over the last year, I've been very consistent in golfing. I love to golf because you're outdoors, you're in the sun, you're out, you know, just kicking it with
that
people.
Vitamin D.
That vitamin D from the sun. Yes, yes, yes. I grew up with two older brothers, so I'm used to being around dudes. You know, I was in a household with my brothers, my dad, and my mom. So I have a lot of platonic male friends. And I have a lot of girlfriends too.
Platonic.
When I say girlfriends, I mean friends who are girls. You know, down here in South Florida, we use girlfriend back home in the Northeast, but down here, you say girlfriend, somebody's looking at you like,
you got to set it straight.
So you guys say friend girl, which is so silly to me. My friend girl. So, golf, also prayer. Like I pray every day. And I don't make it I don't make it official. Like it's not a certain time of the day. I don't take both knees most of the time. It could be me in my car. So prayer is important to me. Spirituality is important to me.
Okay.
Meditation is important. Stretching, walking. I used to use my Peloton a lot. I got to get back to that.
Okay. Peloton.
And travel. Like I'm gone all the time traveling. Like,
I thought I saw you in Africa.
You did. I have been to Africa. My first trip was right before COVID. It was December 2019. I took my son. We went for New Year.
Okay.
And then I went back to Ghana. I went to Ghana for my birthday, January of this year. I took a group of like 20 plus people with me, friends and family. And then I went to a month later, I went to Kenya. Zanzibar. I went to Egypt somewhere in there. Then I went back to Egypt in April. And I'll be in Tanzania, aka Tanzania, next month. So
you're moving around.
I love Africa.
Okay, the motherland. I've been to Nairobi, Kenya.
Okay.
Yeah.
What'd you think about Nairobi?
It was nice. It was different from the whole perspective of how they say, oh yeah, they don't like us over there, but it wasn't like that.
Nah,
it was very welcoming.
Like that.
Yeah. So, you know, I think everybody, especially once you black, you got to go over there and see what's going
on. Absolutely. Were there a lot of people walking and running everywhere?
Everywhere. As soon as we got out the airport, it was people everywhere, but I went more to the safari side.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
but even to get there, you had to go, you know, drive down the street or be driven down the road. I was shocked. There were so many people walking to work, and some people were jogging and running to work.
Yeah.
I saw a couple of people in suits with briefcases running through the field going to work. And I had a tour guide. So I go, wow, is this like every day? He goes, yeah, you know, people rather walk or run instead of being in a car in traffic. They don't want to be in a car in traffic.
Wow. Bringing it back to the basics. But also, you're a businesswoman.
Yeah.
So you got your own spa.
Yeah, yeah.
How'd you get into that?
So, you know, it's a part of the private practice.
Okay.
When I first moved to South Florida, this was in 2007, I worked for the Bureau of Prisons. It was to basically, I had to work for an underserved area or organization because of a scholarship I had in med school, right? So that's where the business stuff starts, because in the very beginning, I didn't want loans. I didn't want a lot of debt. I wanted to be able to invest in property. So in med school, I double dipped. I had a scholarship in med school from the Public Health Service. And then when I graduated med school, I joined the Army Reserve. I had to work in an underserved area. So I came here to work in the Bureau of Prisons, which is the government, the federal government. So that started another pension, right? So I had the Army Reserve. That's a pension. The Bureau of Prisons is another pension. Okay. And during my last, I was there for almost 8 years. During my last year or so, I got tired of being a scapegoat because initially I was the chief psychiatrist and then I became the clinical director, the medical director of the medical department. That's a whole nother story. But I started thinking about private practice.
Yeah.
Shout out to Carter Wiggins, LCSW, because I would talk to him and I'm like, hey, I want to go into private practice, but I'm not sure. And he's like, just do it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So he's the one that convinced me pretty much to take the plunge. So I opened a private practice in North Miami initially. It was part-time. That was in 2013. And I went on a deployment again with the Army. It was my third deployment. I came back in 2015, and I was like, okay, let's go. I'm doing this full-time. So in 2017, I moved my practice from North Miami to Fort Lauderdale.
Okay.
I bought my first commercial property for the practice. Again, real estate investing, right?
Okay, big ups to that.
Yeah, it's important because you have to have a diversified account, diversified accounts according to Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yes.
So that was the first property. And then they were selling another one. And I was like, yo, let me get this too. So I bought another property and I said, this could be our wellness spa. So I wanted something where I could tell our patients, we have this, we have massages available for you. We have acupuncture. We do. So it's two separate commercial properties. And one property, we do the medical management. That's the medications, the psychotherapy. We were doing some art therapy up there. This was all before COVID. Mm-hmm. And then once COVID came, we had to make the transition like everyone else that were pivot. And we became virtual. The spa was still open because, you know, women still need to get facials and do certain things. So we were doing a little bit of that still.
Yeah.
And so that's how the spa came about. And shout out, I got to give another shout out to the Sugarist, LJ Louise Jackson. She is in the spa. She has a business. It's called, don't kill me, Louise. I just blanked on the name of her business. But anyway, y'all look her up. She does sugaring. She's Louise Jackson. I will find her name and give it to you.
Yeah, we're going to put it in the comments below.
Yes, let's do that. But she's in the spa also. She does sugaring. Duvon is in there. She does microblading of eyebrows. So we're just trying to give people the total package in terms of wellness.
Yes.
Because everything's not about a prescription. It's not a medication. It's not about a pill. And it's not about psychotherapy either. Mm-hmm. Another shout out to Coach Simone Kelly, who is the master Reiki coach.
Oh, she does Reiki healing?
Do you know Simone?
Simone, are you talking about the one that owns the Natural Trendsetters?
Oh, no.
Okay.
It's a different Simone.
All right, no.
So this Simone is a Reiki master.
Okay.
So she will be doing Reiki sessions on our spa starting in December. So that's we're partnering up, to bring something different.
Okay. No, we need that. So as a business owner, what's the ROI on a spa?
So, you know, as I said, this was created for our patients. Okay. So I'm not, you know, some people have spas and they got spas like, you know, our spa's nice, it's quaint, but we're not doing hormone therapy.
Okay.
I did not jump in completely because I'm still running the medical practice.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, it just depends on what you have going on there. Like we do some Botox and fillers also, but we don't have so much because it's for our patients. Anyone can come from the community. Don't get me wrong.
Okay.
But we don't market to the community. It's pretty much we do some stuff like on Facebook or on Instagram. We might post something, but we're not going hard with marketing because it was created as an option for our patients.
Okay. I get what you're saying. All right. So through the whole process of that, right, what would you say was your biggest failure that you had to learn from?
There are no failures. There are lessons.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah, there are no failures. I haven't had a failure. Thank God.
Okay.
We've been blessed. We've not had a bad year. When I first started my private practice, I didn't pay myself for I don't know, probably at least 8 months or longer, right? Because I started everything with cash. I didn't take out loans or any of that stuff. So I wanted to ensure that I was, you know, paying the overhead, paying the staff.
Yeah.
So I didn't pay myself for a little while. And so in less than a year, I was able to start paying myself, was able to create a salary, no failures.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, no failures.
You know, people will be afraid of failures, but I tell people all the time, failures is actually a lesson, like you said.
Yeah, it just depends on how you look at it.
Yeah.
If you look at it like, okay, I have to stop. This has interrupted my growth, or this has been a big inconvenience. I don't have time for that. So typically when something's happening, I'm like, okay, so let's go. What are we going to do about it? What's the solution? How do mm-hmm. we get past this? I would say the biggest failure when you're running your own business is when you let a consumer down, when you let a customer down.
Okay.
Because, and sitting here processing it, I would say definitely it's about letting down a customer, because you can't always be perfect or meet people where they are. And anyone who's in the mental health field knows it's very challenging, because you have people who have disorders other than the basic depression, anxiety, stress. There are some people who have glaring personality disorders. There are some people who have addiction issues. They come to your practice, they want a certain medication like Adderall, or they want some Xanax.
Okay.
You know, and when you don't give it to them, they get on Google and they create a post. And half of what they say is not even true.
Yeah.
Oftentimes. So I try to read it and sort through it and talk to my staff, and, you know, and then we move on from there. So I would say the biggest failure is when we disappoint a patient, a consumer, a customer.
Okay. So I heard you say that you were in the Army.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, all right. While you're there, right, mm-hmm. what kind of treatment can you give a soldier that has to go right back to the same conditions?
That's a very good question. No one has ever asked me that. And the reason why I say it's a good question is because when the military brought psychiatrists on board mm-hmm. to help keep their soldiers in the fight, one premise they taught us was no one goes home. You know, mm-hmm. you as a psychiatrist serving in the military, your job is to try to keep everyone in the fight.
Okay.
And so if you're someone who can't separate, who doesn't do a good job with managing your own emotions, you may be talking to a guy or a gal that's been, as we call it, downrange, or had a firefight that day, and they have to be back on duty, guard duty, the next day. And you may be saying, oh, my God, I feel so bad for him or her, or, oh, I couldn't do this. But you won't be able to successfully manage cases and patients if that's the type of personality you have, or your way of dealing with challenging situations.
Okay.
So soldiers, things have gotten a lot better in terms of mental health treatment for soldiers, sailors, airmen, people in the Coast Guard, because they're trying to address the stigma that used to exist in the military. I think the military has done a much better job than the community in addressing the stigma. And addressing that stigma, they have people like me overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan and Kuwait. But obviously, we're not in those first two places anymore.
Yeah.
But when we were for over 10 years, they can have medications like medicine for depression or medication for anxiety. But there are certain medications that are showstoppers. So if they need what's called a mood stabilizer or an antipsychotic,
okay.
Eyebrows are raised and that person has to come back to, they have to come back to the States. But now it's a little different. They have created some exceptions for certain medications, depending on what you're using it for.
Okay. Wow. That's heavy.
Yeah. Cause you know, these soldiers, they see a lot of trauma.
Yeah.
And sometimes you gotta put them to sleep. Because they're not sleeping either, because their brain's on fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the soldiers in infantry. Oh, yeah.
Okay,
not an uppercut or not an IV drug or something
okay.
to put them down. But, you want them to sleep because you want to help reset their brain. Their brains are on fire. They're seeing a lot of trauma. When we first got into Iraq with all the IEDs, the explosive devices that were hidden in the roadways, blowing up trucks, blowing people up, and, you know, all that traumatic stuff. That's a lot of things for someone to think about and try to keep their brain in the fight.
Exactly. Okay, so we get a little bit personal here.
I knew you would.
Right. So you had your son in your sophomore year of college?
I did. Yeah, I was a sophomore. Good for you. Look at you.
Okay, yeah, I did my due diligence.
I see that.
But what kept you, like, going? Like,
those Disney. No, I'm kidding.
Well, what kept you going? Like, what went through your mind at that time?
I'm very determined. I'm very determined. And I always had a goal of being a millionaire by the time I was 40.
Okay.
So when I decided to, that I wanted love so early in my life, I felt like I was ready to have a family. You know, his father and I got married. So we were a family, but getting married that young, you don't appreciate the red flags in a relationship.
Okay.
And then also sometimes two people are just not equally yoked. You're too young to make that decision. Your brain is not even really finished developing when you're 18, 19, 20 years old.
Yeah.
So eventually we got divorced. I want to say about 10 years later.
Okay, that's not bad, though.
Yeah, we met, well, separated 8 years in, and then it took 2.5 years to get the divorce. So
it usually takes some time.
Yeah, yeah, especially in Maryland, Bible State, you got to be separated at least a year.
Okay.
So, yeah, I wanted that, and I had it. My son is 26 now. He is a very good guy. He's very respectful. He went to FIU, got his bachelor's in business there, did a 1-year MBA program at FSU, and, he will be in law school soon. I'm claiming it.
He's okay. For the LSAT we're going to put right it out now. There.
I'm just putting it in the universe, God.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So did that whole situation change your views on having kids while you're pursuing your career?
No, you know, I didn't have any more kids because I wasn't married. I didn't want to, and I'm not, sometimes people date or they're in a relationship with someone and have a kid by every man they dated for 2 years or 3 years. Or, you know, some people got 5 kids and 3 baby daddies and no diss to them. If that's what you want to do, that's, you know, that's your prerogative. That's not me.
But you didn't want the baby mama title.
No, I didn't. And I actually had, there was a guy I dated here when I first moved to Miami. And that's, he wanted that for me. And that was the, for me, I said, you know, this is not, I think we had been dating for 2 years, maybe almost three. Mm-hmm. And he told me like, hey, I'm ready for us to have a baby and all this stuff. And I'm like, we're not married. Well, you know, eventually I'm going to marry you. No, bro.
Yeah.
I said, you really think I want to be walking around pregnant? I'm working in a prison. I'm pregnant. I don't have a ring on my finger.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, this was in 2008. I'm sorry. This was like 2010. So since that time, you know, things have changed drastically.
Yeah.
You got same-sex couples adopting and, having babies, and women are, you know, undergoing artificial insemination process to have a kid because they can't find a mate.
Yeah.
Or women are dating guys that they know they don't like just to have a baby with that person and severing ties in the relationship. So, it's deep out here.
Yeah. No, it's real out here in the streets.
It is. But that's just not been me. I don't want to be a baby mama. Although I turned out to be a baby mama, but more like an ex-wife baby mama.
Yeah, it wasn't. You didn't go in that way.
Yeah.
You know.
Right. So.
Okay. But you say you worked at a prison too?
Yeah, that was my first job out of residency.
Okay. So let me ask you a question. What would you say, like, okay, about the women who ends up in relationships with some of the inmates, like the guards?
Oh, they have low self-esteem. And
okay.
Yeah, they should work on their mental health.
Okay. That's a mental health issue there.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I just heard it wrong. I thought you said women guards who have relationships.
Yeah, women guards who have relationships. Yes.
Okay, yeah. They have self-esteem, low self-esteem. And in fact, when I was a resident, we had psychotherapy cases, and I had a case of a woman who was working at Baltimore City Detention Center, and she was in a relationship with an inmate.
Okay.
And I was her doctor. You know, I couldn't, she wasn't doing anything egregiously wrong in terms of she wasn't abusing. She was abusing an inmate, but it was sort of it was a very gray area as to whether or not I could report it. But she got caught during our psychotherapy session. So that, you know, that was a moot point for me. But she was dated very low self-esteem.
I would have to figure that, because I'm like, why would you, if somebody's in here, you know, what would make you, you know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Because listen, ladies, if you're listening and you're considering you work in the prison system and you're considering dating someone, it ain't worth it.
There's
so many STDs in the prison system and men and male prisons because a lot of them are having sex. I shouldn't say a lot of them. Let me back up. Correction. Some of them are having sex with the inmates.
So I did some more research, right?
Oh, boy.
you're an expert in evidence-based prevention for mental health, right?
Yeah.
So is your evidence more rooted in a holistic side or more of the like Western medicine approach?
I would say more. So let me back up again. Obviously, I went to medical school in the Western hemisphere. So based on that, it's Western-based. However, since that time, I've added alternative interventions. Shout out to Ketamine Clinic of South Florida, KCSF, owners Callie Reed and Sonia Cotto. I'm their medical director. We provide ketamine infusions and vitamin infusions. It's located in Pompano. So, and, you know, just like I mentioned, Coach Simone, the Reiki master. And we've had acupuncture in the spa. So I'm moving more towards the Eastern tradition of treatment, of prevention and treatment. And in fact, you know, I was talking to one of my providers and mentioned to them that I'm considering returning to school to get a degree in homeopathic medicine or naturopathic medicine because, you know, my interests are there now as opposed to I hate prescribing medication. Now, if someone absolutely needs medication, I'm going to I will prescribe the medications. But that's not my first goal, too. I've had patients say to me, you're not going to give me a prescription? No, it's not indicated.
Okay. So how would you describe mental health in a nutshell?
Mental health is being able to balance basically your emotions, how you feel, how you react to those things, and how you maintain your sanity, how you maintain your psyche. So mental health is just, it's a balance of different things in your life and just living healthy. It's making healthy decisions. It's saying healthy things, doing healthy things, living healthy things, and having healthy interactions with other people, being able to interact with people and manage how you interact with them. So mental health is it's really a large umbrella. And so all of these things are under the umbrella because the brain is controlling everything.
Yes.
So we know that mental health, the basis of it is in our brain. It's in our nervous system. So when something affects your brain, whether it's stress, whether it's something chemical or there's some sort of imbalance, it can manifest in interrupting the processes that your brain is responsible for and controlling your mood, preventing you from being sad or preventing you from being able to bounce out of that sadness because all of us are going to have low moods and low points at some point in our lives. But you have to be able to, when you're able, you got to be able to bounce out of those things or bounce back. Sometimes people struggle and they're not able to. They can't overcome it. And that's when you have to know when to go and get help.
No, exactly.
Just one example.
Yeah. Because, you know, people, as soon as you hear mental health, I ain't in no straitjacket. They think, you know, you got to be in a straitjacket or you crazy. And I'm like, no, sometimes it's just you may not know how to process certain things or you may need to sit down, especially with our culture. We're so negative towards the word therapy or somebody. Oh, are they going to tell me about myself?
Yeah, you know, there's a huge stigma in our community, huge stigma.
So why do you think people are more concerned with being labeled instead of identifying that their actions fall in line with that label?
Because people are always concerned about what other people think. And you know, that's the basis of life, right? Don't do this because you'll look like this. Don't do that or this is what they'll say about you. The stereotypes that get created, you know, stereotypes are based on usually misinformation, people being misled. And I don't think, especially here in the United States, there's not this theme of just encouraging people to be themselves.
Yes.
So I think that has a lot to do with it, just being afraid of what people would think about you and trying to just keep up an image, which affects people in other ways, too. The reason why we have so much poverty in America is because people are all about keeping up with the Joneses and not saving their money, but spending to create an illusion like they have money.
No, you're definitely right about that. I be blaming social media for that. Because it creates like a perfectionism type of culture, like where if you make a mistake.
You got to have discipline. You got to have discipline. You got to, and people have to acknowledge social media for what it is. It's entertainment.
Correct.
That's what it's meant to be. It's not. It's never been meant to be your Bible of how to live life.
Or following the meme, like, oh, yeah, that's how I got to be.
And it tickles me when I see people on Facebook, for example, right? Because Facebook was typically the app where if you want to tell a story or you want to post some verbiage or, you know, you want to post a whole lot, typically people would do it on Facebook before Instagram became kind of what it is today. But when people post, I'm shutting down my Facebook, I need to take a break for a little while.
You don't think that's necessary?
No.
Really?
Just don't go on. Why you gotta shut down your account?
There was a whole program on Netflix that showed.
And I just said people don't have discipline.
It's hard. I'm not gonna lie. I had to do that.
If you have to do it because you're too tempted to go in and look at it, do what you gotta do. But people have to get better with discipline.
No,
there are times I don't go on Instagram or Facebook or TikTok for a week or more. There are times I just don't do it. So you have to know how to manage yourself, how to be disciplined. If you can't manage you, how are you going to manage anybody else? How are you going to manage your kids? How are you going to, like, if you can't manage your own stuff, how can you manage someone else?
No, that's true.
Yeah, have some discipline. Okay. And then the people who, it's not about addiction, they don't want to go on because it's distressing to them. It has become a source of sadness because of what they see.
Yeah.
They're allowing it to affect them and ruin their mood or, you know, make them feel bad that they're not doing this or doing that. I think that's stupid.
Okay.
So.
Can you say diet plays a part when it comes to mental health?
Absolutely. Yep. Diet and nutrition, what you eat and what you don't eat. We have the worst diet in the world. Americans are unhealthy. We eat a lot of sugar. We eat a lot of processed food. We eat a lot of fast food. We don't eat enough green vegetables. We don't eat enough fruit. We don't wake up eating fruit. We don't hydrate. We don't drink enough water.
Yeah.
We overeat when it comes to meat, beef.
Exactly. No, I ain't gonna lie.
Yeah. So I had to give up some of the things in your diet.
Yeah. I just, about 2 years ago, I kind of cut back a lot on certain meats and rice and milk and stuff like that. And I've seen a tremendous difference just like,
oh my God,
in my thought process. Yeah.
Cut out dairy.
Eggs is kind of hard, but.
Well, eggs are eggs. They're not dairy, but dairy is, you know, cow milk.
Okay. Yeah.
Cheeses.
Yogurt.
So the one thing that was hard for me to get away from was cheese. I love cheese.
Yeah.
I love cheese.
Yeah.
So, but I had to stop eating it. I've stopped cow milk a long time ago. I enjoy oat milk, almond milk. And I use like coconut based yogurt. It's not dairy yogurt.
Okay.
So that's a good start for people looking to change their diet is to reduce the, and don't do anything cold turkey, you know, gradually reduce it and then stop. And before you know it, you're not craving it anymore.
Okay.
It's amazing.
But how do we reprogram our minds to look at the things that's actually good for us as good? Because, you know, the things that are bad for us, it feels good. You know, Hennessy feel good. You know, some stuff feel good. But yeah. I know it's not good for me.
Listen, the bad shit is the stuff that just make you like, ooh, I want this.
Yeah.
I am not perfect. I tried for a while. I would not eat any beef.
Okay.
But a good steak. Whew.
Yeah.
Like I went to this place on South Beach the other night and they brought New York strip. I was with a group. And so they ordered a New York strip. That thing was just so good. It was so good. Like I'm a foodie. So like I have foodgasms. The way you learn not to eat it. Well, number one, you everything in moderation. Mm-hmm. Don't overdo it. You know, don't eat steak every night.
Okay.
For me, for a while, French fries was like that.
Yeah,
I'm
still kind of weak on that.
I had to get away from the French fries.
Wingstop fries? I don't know.
And that D word, discipline.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Just discipline.
Yeah.
You know, you just gotta gradually get away from those things.
No, you're right. It does boil down to that. You know.
Yeah.
Because I used to be a bad drinker. I ain't gonna lie. Mm-hmm. I just drink like probably like every day.
Mm-hmm.
But then I think when I got like 33, I kind of more transitioned to like, nah, I just can't do it because my body wasn't reacting the same.
Yeah. And I kind of notice a difference in your body with reducing the, because, you know, alcohol has a lot of sugar.
Oh, yeah. I thought I was never a morning person. Yes. And then when I got off of it, well, not off of it. When I cut it back to just Friday and Saturdays,
yeah,
I'm up now at 6 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. You know, my mm-hmm. thing's standing up on its own. I'm like, oh, snap. I used to think it was the other person's problem, you know? So I'm like, yo, a lot of men don't realize that. I used to be the man on Hennessy. And when I hit like 30.
Yeah. You made a good point.
Yeah, it wasn't working. I'm like, what's going on?
Excessive use will do that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Even for one night. One night.
Yeah.
Yes, just even in one night that can happen.
Oh, so. Let me switch it a little bit, right? I thought I heard you say before when I was watching one of your shows. Mm-hmm. Can you explain parental alienation?
Yeah. Yeah. It's so sad. Why would a parent want to split the children so that they don't want to be with the other parent? Parental alienation is a mental, psychological tool that is played, if I can, by one parent. Mm-hmm. And that parent is trying to basically, by through their actions, the things that they say to the children, they're pulling the children away from the other parent. They're making mm-hmm. the kids not want to be around the other parent. Kids are impressionable. They're easy. Their minds are easy to toy with. And you see this, some men do this too, but you see it a lot with women.
Yeah. No, you're right. Did you hear about the situation with 50 Cent and his son?
I saw a little something, not, yeah.
Okay, because he was given when him and his...
The older son or the youngest son?
The youngest, no, sorry, the oldest one, sorry.
I saw something the other day. I can't remember what I saw, but I did see something. Tell me.
He was given the mom probably about $500,000 a year.
Yeah.
He wasn't on child support or anything like that. Mm-hmm. She wanted more money.
Yeah.
Okay. So he took himself to court, and the court said, okay, well, now he's only going to give you $6,700 a month. Mm. So the son is now speaking out saying that wasn't enough.
Okay, wait, let's do the math.
That's like 80 grand. Yeah. Somewhere around there a year.
That's what she gets. That's what she gets, man. I almost said something and I know. Some women are greedy. Some women are very greedy. You're getting $500,000 a year.
$500,000.
Your kid ain't even, whatever that kid is doing, it's not even worth that amount of money.
Yeah.
That's what she gets.
But the son actually said he wants to sit down and speak with 50 Cent. But 50 Cent is kind of being hard on him.
What I'm not understanding is, why is this on social media, right? Probably, I guess, because the son brought it to social media.
Correct,
these people that is just always exposing their business, don't know how to utilize social media. It's not mm-hmm. meant for that. And then number two, why are you telling the world you want to sit down with your father? You don't have a relationship. So that's where I would fault 50 Cent. Yes, you may have paid all that money, mm-hmm. but it means nothing because your son would not have exposed you had you had a good relationship with him. Some people will disagree with me. Some people will disagree and say that you can do all that you can and your kids will still be assholes. This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. However... I don't know what kind of effort he made. Oftentimes, mothers will try to keep the kids away.
Yeah.
50 Cent has money. There's nothing she could have done to keep your son away from you. You could have gone to court, got custody, visitation rights, maybe not full custody, but visitation for at least weekends or every other week. He has money, lots of money.
But it's like, how long do you love something that doesn't love you back?
Well, okay, it's a kid. It's a child. So you have to love.
Though.
No, it ain't. That's your child. You love the shit out of
them. My son done wrote the court 3-page letter saying I'm a trash dad and I ain't dead. I get what you're saying, but it's like, how do I?
So evidently the mother influenced and created this parental alienation thing, right?
Yeah.
Because she wanted to ruin, the father's life. She wanted to ruin the life. So the thing is, you still have to tell the child, listen, regardless of what your mother is doing or what she's saying, or you mm-hmm. don't even have to include her. You can say, regardless of what's going on, I love you. I want a relationship with you. Yeah. I want to work for this. I want to work on this. That's what you have to tell the child.
Yeah.
And if you can't talk to that child, I tell people Write letters, keep those letters. So when they come back and say, where were you during this time? You have those letters. They have the dates.
Pull out the receipts.
You pull out that stuff. You keep your receipts. Okay. And then I told you, I am a proactive person. Dudes, don't select chicks who are going to cause these issues in your life.
We don't know that at
yes,
first.
Yes, you do.
We thought,
yes, you do.
My baby mom,
you knew.
I knew her since we were kids.
You knew there was some flags there when you got older. Yes, you know. See, I get the same look from everybody. initially, the guy's always like, I didn't know.
I didn't see it at first.
You saw red flags. They're like, mm-hmm. Yeah, they think of something. They remember something. When she broke the window in your car, when she followed you.
See, we be thinking that's love.
That ain't love.
She break your window,
yeah,
that's love. She love you.
Close your ears. And you think also everything's going to be better in the bedroom because of it. And that's just not how it goes.
Yeah.
When you see these things, you have to get out the relationship.
Yeah.
Shut it down. So when you don't, and she has a baby by your ass, what do you expect? Like, it's just like I tell some of my female friends, my women friends, my girlfriends, you chose him.
Yeah.
You have a kid by a guy who turns out to be a deadbeat dad, right? This ain't a situation of the mom being nasty, but the father's a deadbeat. He didn't want the baby.
Yeah.
You chose to have a child by him. So you are basically saying yes to all the problems that they're bringing. And that's the same with these women. You guys saw them damn red flags?
You got to take accountability.
Take accountability and shut up. Deal with it. Deal with it.
So yes. Do you think?
And don't take it out on the child. And that's why I'm saying you still love the kid. You still tell
even
them
when
I
he
love
cuss you out.
You say, man, that's improper. You tell him it's improper. You say, you know, I can't accept that. I still love you, and I hope one day we can have a relationship. You kind of put it in their lap because when they get older, hopefully, they won't be under the mother's thumb or under the father's thumb anymore.
Yeah.
You know, you pray that God will deliver them and give them the insight and the knowledge to sort through some things and to see really what life was about.
Yeah.
And to come back to you and say, hey, let's start over.
I messed
up. And when
up.
They come back and say, let's start over, I messed up, accept them back.
Okay. All right.
Those are true stories about your son?
Yes.
Whew. How old is your son now?
16. Yeah.
Wow.
So it was kind of, I mean, in the end, I did tell him, hey, I love you. You know, I'm here if you ever want to talk, but you got to go. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can't help you. Like, if it gets to a point where you're not allowing me to be a parent.
Yeah.
Because see the distance, even though he grew up with me his whole life.
Where is he? Up north?
He's in Cape Coral now with his mom.
Oh.
But he's only been there for probably about 2 years. So that space of time, he was coming back when he was 15. But so during that little space that he had, he's gotten accustomed to her parenting style. I'm more, you can't be on social media like that. You can't sleep with the door closed. You got to read a book for 30 minutes every night.
But see, that's why it's important to be careful who you have kids by, because parenting is a two-person job. So you want the other person to stand by the rules that you set. If these are the rules in my house, you expect the other person to say, okay, and to tell your child, hey,
his mama, that's what you're, doing that.
See, because she's immature.
Yeah.
And she needs to see someone. Your son needs to see someone too, by the way.
No, I know. Well, I haven't seen him since that whole outburst, but I'm definitely looking into it. But I'm hoping once he gets to that point, because I don't think I could bring him back.
Listen, so he doesn't have a desire to want to be around you, to see you, to be with his father? That's crazy. The brainwashing process that occurred, that's very concerning.
Yeah.
Because most boys, as they get older, they want to be around their father. They want to emulate their father. They want to be under their father. Most of the time, they seek to leave the home with the mother and move in with the father.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, the reason why I kind of understood where it was coming from, because when my mom and dad was talking about separating around that age, I was like, yeah, my nigga, I ain't got to listen to you either. So I had to go back.
Well, you didn't want that. You didn't want, because usually
I didn't want the discipline.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm going with my mom all day.
Yeah.
So I kind of.
But if your mom held the line like your father did, then you would see there's no benefit here. I got to do what's right in either household.
Yeah.
So, you're.
So do you think certain thought processes has to be taught, like how to not be jealous or envious and things like that?
Absolutely. A lot of things that we express and what we do as adults is a result of who we were and how we were raised as kids. Your coping skills, your way of dealing with stress, having a happy disposition, a lot of those things, all that stuff traces back to childhood. So, you learn that as a child.
How do we heal that inner child?
Well, you just have to accept that that happened back then. I'm not staying stuck. I'm moving on. This was unfortunate. This is the hand that I was dealt. I don't like how it was played when I was a kid, but I'm going to do something different as an adult.
Okay.
And not stay stuck in whatever trauma you may have experienced as a kid. Because you have to look at it like this, and this is the way I see it. I have only one life to live. I'm going to live my best life as much as I can for as long as I can. Whatever happened in my past was in my past. And if it happened while you were a kid, you can't be held responsible for that. Let's take, abuse of children. You're not sexual abuse. You're not responsible for what happened to you as a child when someone abuses you. Mm-hmm. I just had a patient tell me the other day that she told her mom that her mom's brother, her uncle, sexually molested her. And she told me when she told her mom that, her mother said to her, well, what did you do?
How old was she?
That's the last thing you want to say. By the time she told her mom it was happening, she was in her teens. That's the last thing you want to say to a child. What did you do? What were you wearing? What did you have on? One thing that people can do more of with children is showing them more love, hugs and kisses. And people express love in different ways, but definitely hugs.
Yeah.
Hugs.
So what would you say to a situation like that, right? Like how you said she got molested.
Yeah.
Like, did you see 50 Shades of Grey?
Yeah.
So that whole show was based on him being molested, and he turned it into like some type of sexual pleasure. Mm-hmm. So how would you speak to the mindset of a person like that?
Oof. So you use an example that there's a lot of pathology there. So, the first thing you do is you want to encourage the person to visit the trauma that happened from before. You want to expose it because oftentimes people don't want to talk about it. They don't want to talk about it because it hurts.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't talk about it, it owns power over you. Talking about it, pulling it out of the closet, just laying it out there will empower you, because you'll see the more you talk about it, the less unsettled you become in talking about the situation.
Yes.
So talking about it doesn't mean talking about it to your homegirl or to your boyfriend. It means talking about it with a professional in a session. And sometimes people have to do much more than that. They have to attend very specific types of psychotherapy sessions. And it takes a long time to help someone sever emotional ties with abuse from their past. It's not an easy endeavor.
Yeah, but this sounds like it's costing a lot, though. Like, what's the average price to sit down with you?
With me?
Yes.
Oh, so my initials are between $300 and $450 for the first hour.
For the first hour?
Yeah, that's for the initial assessment.
Okay.
And so if you're a self-pay, if you have insurance, insurances, you have to accept whatever contracted rate the insurance gives you, unless you provide a rebuttal and you rewrite the contract and things like that to get a higher reimbursement rate. Follow-ups for half an hour range between $150 and $225. For an hour, they range between $250 and $325.
Okay. Because I think people may want help, but it always comes back to that point, like, I don't know if I could afford it.
But everyone doesn't charge my prices, There are some psychiatrists who work for community mental health centers. You can go to a community mental health center and see someone that's a lot more affordable.
Yeah.
If you have an insurance plan that I don't take, you can try, a psychiatrist who takes your plan. Mm-hmm. Psychiatrists are going to be the higher price specialist because of what I told you in the very beginning of this show.
Yes, yes.
The amount of education, the training, and if someone has experience, it may even cost more. I have some colleagues who charge $800 an hour.
Wow. Okay, so we coming out of there brand new.
Well, it can get expensive, and that's the challenge, right? Because you want to be able to, and this is why I take insurance.
Okay.
And this is why I have other providers. It's not just me and my practice. There's 10 other providers mm-hmm. right now. Eventually, there will be 14 other providers. So you you have other options for people. And everyone who works with DRT Behavioral Services, Brain Love, everyone who works there, they mimic my sentiments regarding mental health care, regarding treating patients like customers. We typically don't, they're not one and the same, but for us, the customer is always right.
Okay.
You know, you have to help the customer. That's the patient. But and we all believe in total wellness. We all believe in alternative interventions. My prescribers are not heavy handed. We don't go for the pill first unless it's necessary.
Yes.
We are not. Have you seen those commercials or infomercials about, do you need Adderall? Do you have ADHD?
Your doctor
won't give you blah, blah, blah.
These side effects. You might have this. You might get.
And so, you know, there's some companies where you tell them, hey, I got ADD, I need some Adderall, and they're prescribing you Adderall.
Yeah.
Or some doctors who are giving out Xanax and Ativan like it's candy. Mm-hmm. Those things are addictive, and they can also lead to early onset dementia.
Wow.
So we try to do things right based on evidence-based medicine, based on clinical practice guidelines.
Okay. All right. So can you say, does frequency from music affect the human brain as well?
Music therapy, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Music is great for the brain. Mm-hmm. So what song do you listen to that takes you back to a time in your life where you just have a whole lot of dopamine released? You just have this feel-good sensation that comes over you, and you just get happy, and you smile, and it just feels good to you.
Yeah. To be honest, you know, my dad, at first, I didn't like it when he used to play it every Saturday morning. It was happy feelings in the end. But now when I hear it, it's like now I'm like, oh, that, you know, it's hitting. Because when I was growing up, you know, in high school, they was playing DMX and they had to ban some of his music because fights would break out.
Yeah.
So that's when I kind of try to understand, like, okay, music can have an effect on how we move and how we react to things. Same way like words. Would you say words can affect your mental health as well?
Yeah. Words, how they are said, what you say. Can affect us, yes.
So what about phrases like catch? I don't catch feelings. I catch flights and grand risings.
It's just catchy.
And I only live once, things like that. Do you think those things have? Because, you know, when people say I only live once, I mean, we really don't live once. We live every day.
Yeah.
So I would.
You have one life to live, your total life. You have one that we know of, you know. Some things are cliches. Some things are fun to say. Some things are catchy to say. You know, and depending on how someone says it, like for instance, someone was just telling me this the other day. Mm-hmm. When someone dies, she was saying she dislikes it when people try to come up with something to say. Oh my gosh, what did she tell me her family told her? And she detests it. So sometimes you don't have to say anything. Sometimes you can just say, I'm here for you. Let me know if you need to talk. You don't have to come up with something clever to say. Like all these things that you're saying, you don't have to come up with something cliche or something clever or she said, God doesn't give you more than you can handle. She dislikes it when people say that. Mm-hmm. And I think some of these sayings were created just for that, to make us feel better. Mm-hmm. But when you take it literally, when you look at it from a literal standpoint, it's like, what does this really mean? God doesn't give you more than you can handle. Yes, he does. Because he wants you to be able to handle that and move on to the next thing.
So you can grow.
So you can grow. Right. Because you can't grow if there's not a challenge. If you keep doing the same thing over and over, there's no growth. It's not uncomfortable. So that's not really true. He does give you more than you can handle because he wants to make you better.
Yeah. I would look at it more so like, well, why I tell people they got to be cautious about what they speak is because it's kind of like why they call it spelling. It could cast spells. Like my daughter used to always have on her, in her bio, on her Instagram, I'm always bored. And every time I brought her here, no matter what I did with her, she until she changed it. So I was like, you literally cast a spell on yourself by putting that. And she probably didn't even realize what she was
putting. You are what you think.
Correct.
Yeah, words have power. You are what you think. So that's another cliche thing, but it's true. So if you're telling yourself, I'm stupid for doing this, you'll really embrace that you're stupid.
Yeah.
And I don't have enough experience to do this. Mm. And you'll say no to challenging things all the time because you have convinced yourself you can't do it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So to kind of switch it just a little bit, I thought I heard you say, like I was doing my due diligence, right? How can you have intimacy without doing the grown up? Because I saw a post where you put intimacy. And right. It's just intimacy, but
yes,
I don't know, because I'm kind of guilty of that.
It's so much more, mm-hmm. you know, because there may come a time when you can't do grown up stuff. Life, medical, age.
Okay.
There may be some things that you can't resolve. And when you can't do that grown up thing, what are you going to do? Just lay down and die? So intimacy is created. You already said words. It's about what you say. You can be intimate in what you say to someone and how you say it. Whispering it in their ear is intimate. Lying in bed next to someone naked is intimate. You know,
okay.
Giving a very nice foot massage is intimate, a back massage. Yes. A lot of couples don't give each other massages. So there's a lot of ways to be intimate without actually going all the way or hitting a home run.
But you said laying someone, down naked.
Yeah.
Are we doing that and not knowing?
Yeah, you could potentially, yeah. Yeah, you could tee it up for the next time.
Okay, the buildup.
Yeah.
But what about the whole thing about, because I'm not going to lie, I think mm-hmm. I was 19. I was working at Southwest, right? Mm-hmm. And there was a woman there. She was 33. Mm-hmm. And she asked me for a massage. So I said, okay, no problem.
In the airport?
No.
Oh.
Came back to her place.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Oh, we skipped that part.
Yes. So I went back to her place. Mm-hmm. She came out fucking naked. So I'm sitting on the bed like, okay, I'm just going to give her a massage.
A lot of people use a massage as a segue.
But she told me I was a sucker. Like, I threw it in your face. So I'm thinking like, okay, does nice guys really finish last?
So she came out naked.
Yeah.
And so what happened next?
I just gave her a massage. And then we went to KFC and we chatted it up and talked.
Well, that's her fault. She was 32 messing with a 19-year-old.
What's wrong with that?
No.
I was mature for my
age. No, you ain't mature. See, you weren't even mature to catch what she was throwing at you. You were scared of the pussy. Oh, sorry. I forgot I had ears in here. Close your ears. You were scared of the pussy.
Okay. Okay. All right.
So that's why a 30-something-year-old woman shouldn't be messing with no teenage boy.
No. Okay.
No. You didn't even know what was. And so, and furthermore, why is a woman beating around the bush to jump off?
She should have made the
initial. Well, number one, her mistake was she should not have even tried that with a 19-year-old. That's number one. When I see a woman or a man reaching back more than 10 years to do anything.
What about age don't matter?
No, age matters. It doesn't matter to your way later in life. But at that point in time, a 19-year-old stinky little boy, you can't do nothing. She's 32 years old, so I'm thinking, where's her mind? What's her mindset like? You know, what's
He's
her intelligence
young,
level?
Stamina.
So she's trying to, but it's not even that, right? Because there are some men who, she's 32. She could have 25, 26, 27, 30.
Yeah.
You know, plenty of men in their 30s still have stamina and still rock hard is not foreign to them.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is, if that's what you wanted, then say that. Hey, give me a massage. You beating around the bush for what?
Yeah. No.
Let's go back to my place and let's, you know, however you want to say it. Or I'm going to take you back to my place to show you how I feel about you. Or I want to take you back to my place to, and again, we got ears in here, so I can't be explicit. just say what it is. And I find that for a lot of women, that's their problem. They don't speak their mind. They want you to guess. They want you to figure it out.
Well, I've always been told a woman want, you know, they say you got to be a man. You got to come for it. I laid it out here on the table for you.
No, because what happens when you come for it? Me too. Hashtag me too.
Yeah.
Or, you know, he raped me or whatever. Don't play them games.
I wasn't trying to go there like that.
Don't play it. Yeah, exactly. And I know a couple of men who have been hemmed up that way because they went back to an apartment. Something happened. And later she said she didn't want that. So that's why you cannot. You did the right thing, actually.
Really?
I yes, you did.
Because I kind of changed my whole mentality after that.
You did the right thing. When you were giving her the massage, did she? So let's talk about indirect ways to show that you're ready. Mm-hmm. What did she open her legs? Was she sticking her ass out?
No.
Did she move your hand and put it on her breast? Did she move your hand to put it on her vulva? Did she move your hand to rub her butt? So see, she was half-ass about it. Like okay. She sort of brought you to the water, but she didn't allow you to drink. Like,
okay.
There was a lot of games being played. So I think you did the right thing, because the last thing you need is for that chick to go back to the airport and say that.
You tried to do that to me.
Yes. Because it would have been her word against yours. And you're a black man in America. You don't want them problems.
But that messed up my whole psychological thought process after that. Because I was like, man, any girl bite me, I'm going for it. Like, that wasn't the right thing to think.
Because
I changed totally after that. Like. More aggressive.
So it's, you know, that's the thing. And women who are listening to this, hear me when I say this. You make it complicated when you play these types of games, when you don't say verbally what you want, because okay. some guys have been hemmed up because of these types of situations. Mm. And she wasn't even showing you through her actions that she wanted to go to the next level.
I guess she thought because she was naked.
That means nothing. That means okay. nothing.
No, you're right.
Yes, that means absolutely nothing. Just because someone, and that's the thing, you know, these types of things have been on trial before. She yeah. was naked, this and that. Did she say she wanted to make love? Did she say she wanted to have sex?
No, she didn't tell me until the next day at work. She's like, no, boy, I put it in your face.
That's what I'm saying. And then you're like, no, you're on a stand. See, you're on a stand and you're like, no. Well, then why did you do it if she didn't say it?
Yeah.
You see how hard that is to explain? If there's a bad outcome.
Yeah.
And these are the things we have to teach our kids, too.
Wow. Okay.
You know, maybe you could have asked her a question or two while you were, you know, doing the massage, or you could have felt her out. You could have touched her butt. You could have touched her somewhere to see. Mm-hmm. Did
to
you kind kiss of
give
her?
It a little test.
Did you kiss her during the massage?
No. Okay. I just gave her a back massage.
Mm-hmm. And so what happened after the massage?
She got dressed and we went to KFC.
Was she like, okay, thanks, that was good?
Yeah, she thought that was good.
Did she have an attitude?
No. We stayed up to like 2 o'clock. We was chilling in her kitchen, talking, eating. So I thought it was all good.
Yeah.
I actually liked her.
Yeah, she needs to learn how. Hopefully she's learned by now how to express herself. Mm. And the other thing is, why be angry at someone being a gentleman? So there's a lot of red flags for this chick. Okay. Why be angry at someone who's being a gentleman?
I wasn't a sucker then.
No, you weren't. Okay.
So how can we be vulnerable as men and not be perceived as weak?
Well, again, you just can't believe the hype. Don't accept the stereotypes. Don't accept, don't try to keep up with the Joneses. Do what you feel. Do what you feel in your spirit, in your heart, in your mind. Don't worry about what you look like.
Okay.
That's the easiest way.
Okay. So Nia Long ain't leaving her man. Is that a weak thing?
Is that the word right now?
Yeah. So is that, what's the thought process of women who stay after a man cheat on them? You know, they're weak.
Most women stay, because the way women look at it is the next Negro will do the same thing. Why True. Would I start over with someone else who's going to inevitably do the same thing? And that may not even be. That may not even happen, but I think a lot of women are so jaded. Yeah. That's what they've come to believe, that there's no point in me starting another relationship. They have a kid together, too.
Yes.
You know, so you got to think about forgiveness and moving on. I was just talking about this situation. What was this? Monday night with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, I don't know what his motive was, you know, who knows? His motive may not have been about fucking. The motive might have been to get inside information from the office. Like, people are real basic thinkers. They're thinking he did this to fuck.
Yeah.
It's probably not that. She was the assistant to the GM, right?
We don't know who she is. They didn't put her information
out. Yes, we do. She's the assistant to the president of the team, or the assistant to the GM. She's the assistant to someone in a very high position. It's either the president or the GM.
Wow. I didn't know that.
And so for me, I said he's probably just trying to get intel, inside information. It may be that. Because why would you risk? But the other thing that didn't make sense to me is she's trying to cut it off with you. And you go off on her and call her names and all this stuff. Like,
hold on, this is what he did?
Yeah, this is why it blew up. Because so, you know, she was talking to him on the phone in front of her ring. Her husband could hear them because dummy was stupid when it stood.
Oh, so she had a husband too?
She's married. Yeah.
Where you get this stuff? You got the intel.
Oh, shit.
I got my story from the Breakfast Club.
I'm releasing intel I shouldn't be releasing.
Okay.
No, so it was reported somewhere.
Okay.
In an article online or some, at least that part about the ring, it was reported that she was standing in front of the ring talking on the phone to him and the husband could hear it. So she did that. The husband found out about it, called down to the arena or to mm-hmm. the office or yeah. then, you know. And so apparently other people knew it was going on. It's kind of like one of those things you see and don't say anything.
Yeah.
But when she tried to end it with him, he cussed her out. And so I don't know if he cussed her out on the ring or if that came later after uh-huh. she told him, we got to stop. We can't keep doing this. Mm. So I'm not sure if the argument took place on the ring or if it took place like in the office or somewhere else. But that's where the shit hit the fan.
Wow.
Because she was trying to break it off and he
couldn't deal with it.
He cursed her out. So that part is like, okay, if you were doing this just for intel, why would you go so far to shame the girl
or caught up in his feelings?
Demean her. So it yeah. may mean that, yeah, he so but no one knows. I'm saying all these things.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I have no idea. No mm. one knows but those people involved. Wow. And hey, everybody got their issues. He ain't the first man to cheat. He won't be the last.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, me personally, I don't know how you feel about that. I know you've been to Africa recently and before.
Are we going down a poly lane?
Like she caught it before I even said it. I mean, but I think that's the way it was supposed to be. Not to say just any man, because I do think yeah. men now are looking at it more so just for a sexual thing. I'm not looking at it more so like that, because you yeah. can have five women, but they all dummies. You can't really do nothing.
Is it okay for a woman to have five husbands?
No.
Why not?
I mean, because let's look at it, the genetics of how a woman is set up.
What are you talking about?
Okay. A woman wasn't set up to be with multiple men.
How was she not set up to be with whoever?
Now, can she do it?
How is she not set up to be with whoever?
Okay, sorry. Let me get a little bit vulgar here, right? Mm-hmm. The vagina.
What about the vagina?
It wasn't set up to have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Who says not? It's a hole. Whatever can go.
It don't be snapping back like that.
Sure it does. It's connective tissue. If you're someone who has awful connective tissue, maybe it won't. But a penis ain't going to stretch out your connective tissue like that. Maybe a baby will. Maybe some other type of surgery would. But a penis ain't going to cause an issue.
So you believe all vaginas are created equal?
They're not all created equal, though. I'm standing on the words. No, they're not. Because I've seen some during my training. They are definitely not equal.
Yeah.
But so connective tissue is a big thing. Women and connective tissue is a genetic thing. So mm-hmm. if you come from a family where you have a lot of sagging skin, if something happens, your skin doesn't recoil, doesn't bounce back, then more than likely you may have an issue if you have a vaginal birth or, mm-hmm. you know, but that has nothing to do with having five husbands or having five penises in your life.
But the five husbands, right? Because now we have to look at it in terms of culture. Mm. That was never in African culture. That was more Indian culture.
Sure, it's
that
in was African culture, five where? Husbands.
Where?
There's a country in Africa where modern? Women have more than one husband.
But that's what I'm saying. That mm-hmm. that's a modern thing.
No, it's been a long time since they where? Started this tradition.
Ancient Africa? Because if you go back to ancient, there's no ancient civilizations in Africa.
I don't know how long it's been there, but women have had more than one husband for a very long time.
No, of course. So that's why I tell people you have to look at timeline. Right. Mm. So when you go back to Africa pre-interruption from Europeans, right, these types of practices didn't exist. Mm-hmm. So we looking at it more on a modern level. Oh, yeah, I'm going to do what he do. I can have five men and da 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 da.
This is something they've been doing for centuries in Africa, these women with the more than one husband.
Well, remember, when you say centuries, we know that the Europeans been there for centuries. So that's why we got to go back thousands of years. We got to go back to the Mali Mali civilization.
And who actually has that information?
It's documented in their culture. If you go like to Egypt,
yeah,
if you look
but
at,
so who documented what, you know? So you can't, you cannot just go by what we believe to be the truth because someone wrote it down or someone documented something. sometimes people will share with you what they want you to believe. Men don't want true. Women to have multiple husbands. So you're going to document a man can have five wives, but a woman needs to be with one man.
Because it's always been that way. And then also when you look
It's always been that way. Are we using that one?
I mean, it has. But it also when you look at
Well, lynchings and slavery at one point in time was, it's always been this way, man. So why we got to stop with the slaves? It's always been that way.
Well, that's kind of different from actually looking at a woman having multiple men. Right. Mm. I think that's more so now, like women feeling like, hey, I could do what you do.
Well, of course, equality is always a topic of discussion.
Yeah. Right?
And so people want, I think there's the do unto others as you would have them do unto you.
Mm-hmm.
So women are tired of you want to have multiple women because you want flavor. You want something
a little
different.
Spice.
So do women. So the same way we have to repress our desires. The same way that we expect, we want you guys to suppress your desires as well.
But is it a
we
desire
have to do it.
Or a learned behavior?
It's a desire because monogamy is not natural. You know, we are,
really?
We're mammals. Yeah, we're mammals.
That's
so monogamy is not a natural thing. You have to work to be monogamous. You have to be disciplined. Any person who tells you that because they're in a relationship with someone that they're no longer attracted or have not looked at another person or whatever, or did not think, oh, you know, he's handsome or she's pretty, or looked at an ass or looked at a dick print. Whoever says they've never done that,
yeah,
they're lying.
Wow. I think you're the first woman I've ever heard that says that we're not supposed to be monogamous.
I didn't say we're not supposed to be, but I
or
said
it's not natural.
It's not natural. And so, and then when you look at it, right? So you're bringing up, you know, I don't know if you're bringing up after Christ, before Christ, but.
Before.
Yes. So you're bringing up, I just lost my train of thought. hold up. I'll get it back.
Okay. No, it's okay.
Yes. What was I going to say? It was about monogamy.
See?
Yeah. Well, it's the end of the night, man. I said it's not natural.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to be disciplined. I wanted to say we were born into sin. And so we were born into sin, depending on what you believe.
Okay.
We were born into sin. And Jesus was sent here to save us, right?
Okay.
But after Adam and Eve and all those things, life hasn't been perfect anymore. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we're challenged with being monogamous is a manifestation of basically our punishment.
So you think Eve had another dude on the side?
No, I don't. That's when life was perfect until she ate the apple.
Okay.
Once she ate the apple and we, you know, they begin to multiply and have all these kids.
Yeah.
Cain and Abel and all these people.
Uh-huh.
Eventually, maybe they were their grandkids. I don't know because I'm not a specialist in the Bible. But I think those were their kids.
Uh-huh. Cain and Abel. Yeah,
yes,
for sure.
Okay, good. Sunday Bible school, vacation Bible school. Just saying that having the challenge of maintaining monogamy is a part of the challenge in living life here on earth. We have a lot of challenges on earth.
No, yeah, it is.
And that's what I remind people, like, hey, this is not a perfect world. You're going to always have challenges.
Yeah.
There will always be something challenging, some person, some situation, something. And so monogamy is one of those challenges.
Wow. Okay. So are you for, like, polygamy?
Am I for polygamy?
Yeah.
I don't want multiple husbands.
Okay.
I also don't want to marry someone who has multiple wives. It just doesn't make good sense for my lifestyle. Like, I can handle you. You don't need five other wives. I got this right here.
Okay.
If you say you're bored, then, you know, then I think that's something that he has to work on. Maybe it's not about her. It's more about him. And if it's someone who wants a variety of vaginas, then keep it moving.
Oh, okay.
Like, you know, do what you do. But if someone is not with it, you can't force
it upon them.
Yeah.
Okay. I agree with you. Mm-hmm. This has been interesting.
Yeah. I got to pee.
I want to thank you for coming on.
Don't
this
be
has
looking
been
like
great.
That over there.
This has been great. Yeah. Let everybody know where they can find you at.
So, people. After you subscribe, if you're not already subscribed to this podcast and to his YouTube channel, Subscribe to me on YouTube. I'm Dr. Delvina Thomas. Doctor is abbreviated. It's Dr. Delvina, D as in Delta, E L, V as in Victor, E N A Thomas, T H O M A S. And also, I have a podcast. It's every Sunday night at 8 p.m. Eastern. It's the Brain Love Podcast. It's on all your podcast platforms. So whatever you like, go there and put in the Brain Love Podcast and click subscribe. You don't want to miss an episode. Yes. They are very, very good episodes. So you were talking about polygamy and all that stuff. There's a couple of episodes with Nigerian men talking about polygamy. Also a Nigerian guy who don't want to be faithful to his wife. So there's some good episodes on there.
Okay. Have you ever had trouble dating since you're the doctor?
It's actually something that lures people in. Like,
really?
I want to date this psychiatrist. You know, they find it to be challenging. So I think some men want to see what I'm like. Because, you know, psychiatrists are mysterious type people.
Yeah.
That's a part of the stereotype of a psychiatrist. Also that we're crazy, that we're wacky, that we're, you know. So I found that some guys want to date just because they want to see what I'm like.
Okay.
And also, I think because they have their own little mental health challenges. And when I see the red flags, you can't pay me enough to stay.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm like, bro, we're better off friends. I'm good on this.
So when do you ever have to turn off the doctor?
Like I said, the qualities that make me a good psychiatrist, they existed before I became a psychiatrist. So certain things you can't turn off. Like, I'm very intuitive. So okay. I can't turn that off. But I don't go around, I heard how you talk to your son. You shouldn't talk to him that way. You should blah, blah, blah.
You should see me.
It's not like that. I'm a regular old person.
Okay.
You know, we talk. We have regular conversations. So I'm not a doctor 24/7.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you, Mrs. Thomas.
You are welcome.
It's been a
pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Man, you already know what it is, man. It's your boy, Mr. Williams. I Talk Gray, and we are out of here.
Yeah. Brain love.
Ooh, this was good.
Ooh, that's